Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Under the Equal Access Justice Act, an individual can obtain attorney fees in civil litigation with the United States government if it is a prevailing party, if the government's position is not substantially justified, if there are no special circumstances that make an award unjust, and if within 30 days after the final order of the court, the prevailing party petitions the court for its attorney's fees and submits a itemized account of the hours spent on the case. For the government's position to be substantially justified, there must be a reasonable basis in law, in fact, that a reasonable person could accept as true. Furthermore, for the government's position to be substantially justified in a EJA litigation or EJA court proceeding, it must be substantially justified at the pre-litigation level and at the litigation level. A decision by an ALJ is a pre-litigation matter. In a recent decision by this court, Golombuski v. Barnhart, the court found that the commissioner's position was not substantially justified because in finding the claimant's testimony incredible, it failed to follow the mandates of Rule 67P regarding testimony and didn't state the factors in its decision that were necessary to be brought up. It also found that the commissioner had used post hoc rationalizations to support the ALJ's decision, and it found that the court, in finding that the district court finding that the commissioner was substantially justified, had abused his discretion. In the case before the court today, I believe that the same thing has occurred. The court remanded, the district court remanded the case on two grounds. It remanded on the fact that the ALJ failed to state the required factors that are required by circuit precedent and also by 96.7P. And it also remanded the case because the ALJ had rejected the treating source's testimony, but when he said remaining medical evidence supported his rejection of the treating source's testimony, he failed to articulate reasons why he was rejecting the treating source's testimony. I believe that in his EJA decision, he says, credible portions of the record support the commissioner's decision, and therefore, to a substantial degree, a reasonable person could be satisfied. But when the district court says credible portions of the record, he's not talking about the ALJ decision or the reasons that the ALJ articulated in his decision. And I believe a reviewing court is only limited to deciding whether the ALJ had a reasonable basis or not. It can't review the whole credible portions of the record. It's limited to what the ALJ had in front of him or what the ALJ wrote in his decision. In fact, in Still v. Barnhart, the court held that regardless of whether there is substantial evidence to support the ALJ's decisions, principles of administrative law require the ALJ to rationally articulate the grounds for his decision and confine our review to the reasons supplied by the ALJ. Here, the court is looking throughout the whole record and finding that credible portions support it. Additionally, the commissioner failed to cite to 90, or the ALJ did cite to 96.7P, but just because you invoke a legal law does not mean that it's going to pass muster before the circuit court. The ALJ failed to do the factors that are enunciated in 96.7P, and also there's circuit precedent in Still v. Barnhart in 2002, Golombuski in 2003, Golombuski in 2004, that says these factors must be enunciated. The ALJ failed to enunciate the medical treatment, the activities of daily living, or the medicines that the claimant was taking. Additionally, the commissioner provided post hoc rationalizations for the commissioner's decision for denying medical for denying the treating source's opinion controlling weight. It says in its appellate court brief that it didn't do this, but right after that it starts citing to Dr. Melian's records at transcript 147-148, which the ALJ never discussed in its decision. It also cites to DDS examinations by Social Security doctors that the ALJ had noted had diminished value because there was additional evidence after they made these opinions, so he was giving them diminished weight. The commissioner makes arguments that those opinions also support the administrative law judge's decision, and they also go and talk about evidence that the judge did talk about his decision, but they find new rationales and new basis to support that this evidence supports the administrative law judge's decision. They can't do this under Chanery, under Golombewski, under Still v. Barnhart, under O'Connor v. Sullivan. There's just a lot of court precedent that says the commissioner can only make arguments and support the ALJ's decision that the ALJ made himself in his decision. They can't go and search the record for additional evidence to support the ALJ's decision. I would like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal, please.
Certainly, Mr. Blatt.
Thank you.
Mr. Marquette.
Good morning, Your Honors. Kurt Marcille appearing on behalf of the Commissioner. Your Honors, the issue in this case is whether the District Court abused its discretion. There's really no dispute that the ALJ made errors, that the District Court ruled against the agency. The issue before the court, again, is whether the district court abused its discretion, finding that the agency was substantially justified in defending this action. And the court was very specific in its rationale, stating that the government rationally responded to the issues raised in the plaintiff's brief in the district court. That brief raised two issues. First, it asserted that the treating physician's opinion was supported by objective medical evidence and therefore entitled to controlling weight. The second issue it raised was that the claimant's allegations of pain were credible based on the objective evidence and the treating physician's opinion. The claimant's arguments in the district court did not allege that the ALJ did not adequately articulate his rationale. It did not allege that the ALJ ignored factors cited in ruling 96.7P, and it did not allege that the commissioner was engaging or that the commissioner even needed to engage in post hoc rationalizations. Interestingly, the credibility argument relied upon so heavily by the appellant before this court was raised in only one paragraph in his district court brief, and it simply wasn't fleshed out enough to provide a basis for preserving it for review. And in spite of the appellant's assertions that the government provided post hoc rationalizations in this case, it simply isn't the case because the government didn't need to before the district court. Simply put, at the district court level, the plaintiff raised the two issues earlier identified, and the government responded to them. The district court concluded that the government's responses were rational in light of the arguments raised, and therefore found the government substantially justified. This court should find that the district court did not abuse its discretion in making that finding. Finally, with respect to Golombewski and this court's decision, both on the merits in Golombewski as well as in the EJA litigation, this isn't the same case. As noted, the issue of credibility and whether or not the ALJ applied the appropriate SSR 96.7P factors simply wasn't raised or litigated in the district court. Furthermore, in Golombewski, this court noted multiple errors and multiple violations, including the ALJ's failure to discuss lines of evidence and his mischaracterization of evidence. None of those errors occurred here. None of the factors cited in Golombewski are present in this case. Therefore, we would assert that Golombewski is inapplicable and this court should find that the district court did not abuse its discretion, finding the government substantially justified. If there's no questions, I'm finished.
Doesn't appear so. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Blanton?
Yes, Your
Honor. At the district court level, I raised two issues, as counsel for the commissioner noted. Both of those issues, the judge found were reversible and had to be remanded back. In Golombuski, the court said that they did not reject any issue by the plaintiff on appeal, nor did we adopt or affirm any position taken by the commissioner. That's what happened in this case. I raised two issues. They reversed and remanded on both of them. The court did not adopt or affirm any position taken by the commissioner. And in Golombuski, it says this is exactly the strong language against the government's position in a merits opinion, which it established lack of substantial justification in the ALJ's decision and in the commissioner's defense of that position. Finally, regarding whether or not I raised the issue of 96.7P, at the district court, I raised two issues, as counsel noted. My second issue was credibility. I noted that the ALJ's decision, the finding the claimant's testimony incredible, was incorrect, and I cited to Golombuski, which is circuit precedent on this case. I also noted that in addition to the treating physician's opinion, there were other treating source opinions. There were non-treating examinations that were considered. There were x-rays that were considered. There were MRIs that were considered. That goes to the medical treatment the claimant received, and the ALJ did not discuss that in his decision. So I think that I did raise the court case Golombuski, which deals with 96.7P credibility, and I also stated factors that the ALJ did not address in his decision that the court said needed to be addressed on remand. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.